You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, is there an autism epidemic? And if so, should we test every infant for autism? As cool as the cars he makes, does Elon Musk's Tesla company have a chance in hell to survive? Manny the Movie Guy licks his Oscar prediction wounds and reviews this weekend's big new movies. Our travel guy explores the revival of a Pacific Northwest city you may have just written off. Joining me in the studio is a man who is uptight and out of sight. It's Chris Martin.
We may have found the most sexist law ever imposed by any government ever.
If you listen to this show on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a five-star review. You're helping the show by doing that because the folks over at iTunes, they read your comments. And they notice your five-star reviews. What do you say we get things started, Chris? The most sexist. Is it a law? Is it a tax? What is it?
It's a tax, but isn't a tax proposed through the lawmaking system?
You got to pass a law to get the tax to happen. That's right.
Yeah, and I thought that sounded more impactful than just using the word taxed. But let me give you the headline paragraph.
Yeah.
Yesterday, five women filed a class action lawsuit against the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance, urging lawmakers to lift the tax on tampons and sanitary pads.
What?
Known as the tampon tax.
They have a tampon tax in New York.
New York is not the only place where they have a tampon tax, by the way. There are other places around the world that also implement a tampon tax.
What? Now, can you, I don't know if you can you explain the logic behind that? Because, you know, we have taxes that are punitive. They try to stop you from doing certain things, right? Like tax on cigarettes. They keep raising the tax in hopes that it will become so expensive people to stop smoking cigarettes, because there's a correlated cost to the economy through medical issues.
Mm-hmm.
But so those are called there's sin taxes too, right? You have those.
Sure, yeah.
A tax on alcohol, right? You're having fun out there, you're going to have to pay a tax. There's there's taxes in hotels, the bed taxes, right? And so this tax, I don't understand. It's just all women get their period. Let's raise some revenue off of that. Is that the logic behind it?
Sort of what it feels like, but what it really is a semantic in the system as far as what these products are labeled as. So right now, these feminine general hygiene products are labeled as general merchandise.
Okay.
And the women that are filing this lawsuit say these are not general merchandise items. These are actually medical devices, which items that fall under medical items are not subject to the same type of taxing. For example, other items deemed medical include things like Rogaine, dandruff shampoo, and lip balm. Those types of things where someone would say, oh, this is for something to better someone's
health. I see where they're going with this. If you're going to tax us, you need to tax men and the products that they use for
No, they're not saying that. They're saying you need to stop taxing us.
Well,
and they're not alone in that fight.
No, I'm with them on that because it is a sexist thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really no reason to tax that other than
the multiple millions of dollars that come in.
Give me more of your money.
As far as tax revenue.
Yeah. Right.
The women say without access to tampons and sanitary pads, women are forced to use unsanitary and dirty rags, which can lead to infections and disease, which is very true. So there's no reason why they shouldn't be labeled as medical devices or
here's what I suggest.
For medicinal use.
This could solve the problem politically. There's a political solution to this. Gather up a bunch of women who are on either side of their PMS and have them look over every line item of the New York State budget while they're in that state.
Okay.
All right, state of mind or whatever you want to call it. And give them a red pencil and have them cross out the things that piss them off.
There would be a lot of red pencil marks, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And not just if those women looked at what was being taxed or
yeah.
what laws were in place, but anybody that
or
looked
what
at
the
it.
State is spending money on it that requires
right.
taxation. And so once they go through there and they say, okay, this is how much the state should be spending, there's no need for about half of the taxes that the state is imposing.
Isn't that what we all do with our complaints about the government constantly,
yeah.
by the way?
And it's what we all do with our personal finances. We look at what we're spending our money on when we can't afford things, and we say, okay, well, let's cut this out of the budget until we can afford that again.
Sure. Yeah, we need to be a little bit more frugal here. It's a little bit unnecessary. But in this case, it feels wrong to tax feminine hygiene products. And like I said, the women are not alone. The governor of New York and the president himself both support the repeal of this tax.
Yes, that's an easy press release, little flag in the or feather in the hat.
Yes, I'm against this.
I'm against the tampon tax. Yay, we're voting for you.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on this story, see how it unfolds.
You know who should if they need that money again there in New York, they should just tap into the Forbes billionaires. The list of billionaires that they have from Forbes that came out earlier this week, right? Those
mm-hmm.
guys could just write a check and cover the difference.
I did the math one time, Phil, where if you took the collective sum of everyone's fortune on the Forbes billionaires list
yeah.
and divided it around the world to every person on the planet,
yeah.
it would be something like $10 per person.
Oh.
Which goes to show you that this major discrepancy in wealth, which does exist, still wouldn't solve all the world's problems.
Of course not.
As a matter of fact, it would just make everybody completely poor.
No, so what you do is you omit five or six countries that, just have a lottery, and then you can get that $10 up to maybe $150.
Yeah, and you can get for $150 in some places?
A lot in some places.
Oh, yeah, you're practically rich.
Like if you're a poppy farmer in Afghanistan, that's a whole year's crops right there.
Sure. But as you mentioned, the Forbes billionaire list has been released earlier this week. Here's a couple of interesting notes from it. One thing I found interesting, Michael Jordan is on the list for the second year in a row and moved up 150 spots. He's like the 1,600th richest person in the world.
Every time I hear that he's on the list, isn't that remarkable that Michael Jordan is a billionaire? Is Magic Johnson a billionaire?
He could be. I didn't see his name on the list. You would think that if they were going to mention him, they'd compare him to Jordan.
Yeah, you would think, because Michael Magic Johnson, when you talk about him, he is a businessman, and he owns, what does he own now? The Clippers, right?
Some would say he is Los Angeles. No, Steve Ballmer owns the Clippers, which, by the way, is one of the reasons why Michael Jordan is so rich.
Yeah?
Yeah, Jordan bought the Charlotte Hornets in 2013 and raised his stake to 90% ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we all may remember when Donald Sterling went all racist on us and
yeah.
ended up losing the Clippers in a bidding war to Steve Ballmer
yep.
for $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
It drove up the value of all the other basketball teams, including Michael Jordan. So his stake, which he bought into it right before the issue.
Oh, just the right time.
Went through the roof.
Oh, by the way, I just remembered. Michael Magic Johnson owns his...
The Dodgers.
Part of the group of the Dodgers owners.
But it's a very large group. So Michael Jordan owns 90% of the Hornets. I think that Magic Johnson is maybe one-fifth ownership
that
or something
sounds,
along those
sounds
lines
about right.
in the Dodgers. Yeah,
yeah. And they paid a couple $1 billion for the Dodgers, right?
They've Yankee money.
Yeah.
And that they're paying their players a ridiculous sums of money as well.
It's ridiculous, I
unbelievable.
Tell you.
How do we get our piece of the pie?
I don't know.
By the way, Jordan's $2 billion in annual revenue he brings in for Nike for his shoes doesn't hurt either. One other thing from the billionaires list that was interesting was the five youngest billionaires, the oldest of which is 26 years old, and the youngest of which is 19 years old, worth $1.2 billion.
What does that 19-year-old do for a living?
Rides horses.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, she's an equestrian show performer.
And she's a billionaire for riding horses?
No, her father passed away and left her 47% stake in some billion-dollar company.
And so she's got no reason to work, and she rides a horse all day.
Yeah, I'm sure she does many philanthropic things with the money that she has, and she's probably learning how to handle it. But actually, three of these youngest billionaires all inherited the money, which back in the day, I think it was Carnegie who warned against that type of affection, like trying to show your children affection by leaving them these mass amounts of money. Because
which billionaire
it could just screw
is it who's already said publicly that when he and his wife die, they're not leaving any money for their kids?
I don't remember. Wasn't he leaving the money to his dogs though? Was that the story?
Maybe it was. He said because he wanted
take care of these
Labradors. He wanted his kids to make their own way.
And as it should be. Yeah, you get to learn the value of a dollar.
Yeah.
And who knows, though? Maybe these kids will come out on the right end of it.
All right. The kids are screwed up, so many of them. And proof of that, a new reason, a wrong reason, but a new one to call 911. Next, here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. We were talking about billionaires not leaving money for their kids. There's a guy who's been living with his parents for the past year, and he posted a picture of a bill his mom gave him. She charged him $29,000 for everything from cable and gas to food and health insurance, plus a $1,000 fee for being, quote, an a-hole and not appreciative of your mother's support.
Well, that's loving.
Isn't it?
Great to hear such a loving family story.
Yes.
She'll never get away with that, right? I can't imagine.
She'll never get away with it?
Yeah, I don't think so, unless there was some sort of contract in place where
love,
they agreed
you know,
to a charge.
Hey, pay or you're out. You're evicted, son.
Yeah, but he's already gone, right? Now she's trying to charge him for living there in the past?
Is that what it said?
I don't know. I felt like it was the end of his tenure there.
No. Yeah, I think he still lives there.
Oh.
He's a load.
Well, in that case, he better pay or get out. Yeah.
He's 36 years old, I think. No, it didn't say how old he is. It's the sports bra. You know that the woman who invented the sports bra made her first prototype out of two jock straps.
Oh, that's ingenuitive.
What, excuse me? We've gone over that word before. It's not a real word, Chris.
It is in my book.
All right. Her name is Hinda Miller, and she helped invent the sports bra in the 1970s. She eventually went on to be a state senator in Vermont.
It's interesting because the first jockstrap was actually made from a sports bra.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that.
No, most people don't. That was also ingenuitive. All right. People call 911 because... why? Because there's no mayonnaise on... They ask for no mayonnaise on their filet of fish, right?
I've heard that one. Yeah, people are upset with their drive-thru order.
Yeah.
I remember one guy called asking for a ride to the liquor store.
Yeah.
There's some good ones.
So those people were kids at one time, and something went wrong in their childhood. They just weren't, brung up right, right? Something went wrong.
Yeah, something went haywire.
And here's an example of things going wrong. It's because it's an important piece of parenting to teach your kids to dial 911. When there's a real emergency. But it's also an important piece of parenting to teach them the definition of the word emergency.
Definitely.
Sheriff's Department in Greenville County, South Carolina. That's how they say it there. Greenville, right?
Is it actually Greenville?
It's Greenville.
Okay.
Yeah. But they say Greenville.
Right. Shorten it up.
They got a 911 call this week, Wednesday, from a 2-year-old girl. So a deputy went over to the house to check it out. And here's the girl's emergency. She was having trouble putting on her pants.
Oh, that is rough.
Family member was home at the time, but she didn't ask the family member, and they didn't know that she'd called 911.
Maybe she was trying to hide it, huh?
Well,
she was having trouble putting
on
her pants.
She's a proud 2-year-old, huh?
Right.
So the deputy helped her pull up her pants, then the girl asked for a hug. And the deputy says that was the best part of her shift. The girl is obviously not going to be charged with misusing 911. But the family member who was home at the time listens to this program and just found out that the whole thing happened.
Yeah, how does the cop show up and help the child put her pants on and the parent doesn't know?
I don't know. Maybe the little girl was sitting at the window or on the porch or answered the door, said, come on in, have some coffee and some cookies.
I'm impressed with the speech skills of the two-year-old.
Are you?
Sure. At 2 years old, you can ask for that kind of help.
Why not?
Relay that message properly.
It all depends. I will tell you, in my experience with my three girls, and of course, they're the apples of my eye, and they're the smartest girls and the prettiest girls on the planet because they're my girls, right?
Oh, I can vouch for that. I've met them.
Okay, good. Just keep your distance.
Right.
The thing that we did, and my wife, Remy, she was a stay-at-home mom, and she spoke to them and sung to them and read to them all day long, every day, and didn't baby talk to them. She spoke to them in normal adult English. And I'll tell you, by the time all three of my girls were 1 year old, they were having conversations with other adults. Now, their speech wasn't the greatest, but by the time they were two, it was a no-brainer. They would just have normal conversation with whomever it was they were having conversation with. And I see five-year-olds who can't string a sentence together.
Yeah, you're right. There's a wide spectrum of the differences between children at that age and what they're capable of as far as speech and communication.
And I just think it's a matter of what they become accustomed to. And kids learn in a hurry. You see kids who come over here from China, for instance, from Taiwan, and a year or two later, after not speaking a lick of English, speak almost as good, if not better, than their peers.
Yeah, I think one of the big things that you said in that, too, was the way that your wife raised them in speaking to them in a normal talking voice and also singing to them, because now you see those commercials, they're like PSA commercials all the time that say, sing to your kids, talk to your kids, you know, these first five commercials.
Yeah.
Obviously makes a difference.
Yeah. By the way, my wife, who is at home singing and talking to the speakers as she listens to this program live, was screaming, Warren Buffett! It's Warren Buffett who's not giving his money to his kids.
Oh, get out of here, really?
Yeah.
You would think that he would leave something behind.
Yeah, his intellect.
Oh, okay, his know-how?
Yeah. If you're Warren Buffett's kids and you don't know how to invest and make a living?
Yeah, but if you don't have anything to invest with... You know, just a little starter kit. Even Trump got $1 million from
Warren
his dad
Buffett
to get started.
Started with a dollar and turned it into two and turned $2 into four and turned four into eight. And that's what, look where he is now.
Top five in the billionaires list.
Yeah.
Guy's impressive.
All right.
It's a good thing your wife listens because,
you know, I've got a listening problem.
Yes, as do I.
Hey, you know what? It's the most exciting part of the year for sports fans. It is time for the Iditarod.
Yes. The most famous event in all of sports, the Iditarod.
Yes. Billions of dollars are spent by advertisers for 30 seconds during the watching of the Iditarod.
If you don't know what the Iditarod is, it's a trail run in Alaska every year where they hook a bunch of dogs up to a sled and drag humans for several miles across the snow.
And there's death.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Brutal.
It is.
Yeah, and there's a lot that goes into it. We're probably underselling it a little bit, but something interesting that's come out of it this year is Anchorage, Alaska had such a poor winter that they were forced to ship an entire train full of snow for the Iditarod dog sled race.
So they're going to lay snow down on the part where they're supposed to pull the sled.
Right. Well, especially at the beginning, the opening. You know, I think once you get off into the hills, there's a little bit more snow there and they don't have as much to worry about. But where they get this race started is where all the people in the city gather and watch. It's sort of a ceremony for them all to ride through the town. Well, there's not enough snow there, so they had to bring it down from Fairbanks. And if you see some of these pictures, it's literally, you know, dozens of cars, train cars full of snow that came down the train tracks and had to be dumped onto the ground so these dogs could get this race started.
Why don't they just delay it until they get some snow?
You can't delay the... That's like delaying the Super Bowl, Phil. You can't just delay the Iditarod run.
Well, remember when they were talking about, it was 2 years ago, that the snow was going to be so bad at the stadium? Where was it?
I think that was in New York.
New York or New England, one of those two?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, that the snowstorm was going to be so bad they were going to have the Super Bowl on a Monday instead of a Sunday. Remember they were talking about
sure,
that?
Sure, yeah. That was the Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl, if I remember correctly.
But everybody was saying they were up in arms. There's no way. You can't have the Super Bowl on a Monday.
Right. No, it doesn't even make sense.
The economy would grind to a halt. Nobody would go to work.
Yeah, there'd be panic in the streets.
Yes.
It turned out it ended up being like 60 degrees and perfect.
Yeah, it was. It was a wonderful day.
Perfect for everybody except for the Broncos.
Yes. Gosh.
Who got just.
By the way, did I mention it was Warren Buffett who's not giving his money to his kids?
Yeah. Anytime I hear the word Buffett.
Yeah.
Now I know. Stingy old man.
Disney used Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs instead of dwarves because dwarves didn't become the more popular spelling until J.R.R. Tolkien used it in The Hobbit a few years later. Did you know that?
I didn't. I thought that would actually be because of some sort of politically correct thing with what you label little people.
Yeah, you know what? There is probably some concern about that today.
Yeah, because
why don't we just burn the movie?
No way. That's a classic. One of my favorites.
Yeah, but they say dwarfs instead of little people.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. It was so long ago.
Hey, here's a question for you. Should all babies be screened for autism? We have an autism expert joining us with her opinion on this, and it's an interesting question to ask because something like 1 in 110 babies are born with some level of autism. Sounds like an epidemic, doesn't it?
Yep.
We'll dig into this next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. We're asking the question today, should all babies be screened for autism? Joining us now is the author of the book, The Unprescription for Autism, A Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, and More Focused Child. It's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Our guest is also the founder of Autism Health, and there's a website, loveautismhealth.com. Dr. Janet Lintala, welcome to the show.
Hi, Phil. Thanks.
Now, before we get into the main question, a little background here. You are a mother of three boys who have a variety of issues. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, autism seems to come like a package deal. So my first son was born 21 years ago, and it took us a while to realize he was on the autism spectrum. But as our other boys were born and then began to get older, we began to realize we have autism spectrum disorder. We have Tourette disorder. We have OCD and anxiety and panic attacks. We have food sensitivities. There's just a lot of things that come with it. And, of course, my boys don't have it all. They're more prone. People on the spectrum are more prone to allergies and asthma and more frequent colds, some of them. There's just a lot of health challenges, which aren't really described in the diagnostic screening materials. So a lot of this is new research over the last 10 to 20 years, and we just are learning more and more and more about autism.
Boy, you have your hands full for sure. It seems like autism is very, very common now. I hear public service announcements that say something like 1 in 110 or so kids will be born with something on the spectrum. Are we in the middle of an epidemic?
Well, actually, the rate's 1 in 48 now. And
oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. It's like you can't sit still before it changes again. And, you know, I don't like to use the word epidemic. The language and politics of autism are changing as we're growing up with these kids and they're becoming adults. But, yes, it is alarming. There's a lot of it out there, although some studies seem to indicate that we've always had this rate. We just weren't aware of it. And, for example, here's another reason why I'm in favor of screening all babies and toddlers. We're missing the girls. We've been expecting the girls to present exactly like the boys, and they're completely different.
Hmm.
So, we always thought it was 4 to 5 to 1 boys over girls, and now we're thinking it might be closer to maybe 2 to 1.
So why do you think this is happening? Is it environmental? Is it something else?
I think it's a mix of things. There is no single autism gene. We spent the 90s looking and hunting for the autism gene. And really, it's based on a lot of genes, maybe up to 100 or more. And, of course, any genes are going to be influenced by the environment. So I can't really say that genetics alone causes autism or the environment alone. I think it's a combination of genetics and environment and the timing of environmental triggers during, you know, whatever stage of development the child was in.
What's happening in the brain of a child with autism?
What's happening in the brain? Well, for one thing, they think there is an immune subset of autism, and we actually have some autoimmune action against up to 8 different tissues so far that have been identified in research on the brain. So, you know, as you're looking at this child or adult, all these things are invisible, this immune system attack on the brain. Sometimes just certain areas aren't active enough, like, for example, the areas for social skills or communication. You know, the brain is there. It's just not active enough in doing its job.
Mm-hmm.
We have neurotransmitters that are imbalanced. There's just lots of things going on. It's different for each person on the spectrum.
But you often find that certain abilities are enhanced.
Well, as with anyone. I mean, any child or adult's going to have strengths or weaknesses. It's kind of a myth that every person on the spectrum has a special gift or something like that. I think every person has a special gift.
Right. Yeah.
So, yes, we're going to have special abilities. I think these children and adults are underestimated. Phil, when you have someone who's not looking you in the eye and nodding and smiling as you speak, you assume they're not listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not very bright. But they're being way underestimated. These are fabulously gifted people in many areas. They just don't give off the same social signals as everyone else.
Again, your book is The Unprescription for Autism, A Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, and More Focused Child, which implied in there is that there is something we can do to correct some of what's happening with autism. And so I guess the question is, can you reverse autism, or can you improve the child's life experience?
Well, the short answer for reversing autism is no. Nothing in this book treats, cures, fixes, or prevents autism. That's not really possible. However, by addressing any underlying health issues or, you know, skill deficits, certainly we can improve their life, their chance of independence, their health, their happiness. A lot of these things, for example, part of that immune subset of autism, they're in chronic inflammation. Inflammation's a tool of the immune system. So if you have an inflamed brain, you know, I'm not sure that's beneficial. It might make you a little slower to process things in the classroom or in therapy. Sometimes there's a delay. You can tell when they hear and then when they answer. And I think if you clear up even just a few things like that, it has a tremendous positive effect on the brain, mood, cognition, language, communication, eye contact. So it's not just about speech therapy and occupational therapy. I think we need to start being aware of all these health issues that research has been bringing to the surface.
You think we should test all babies for autism. Now, does this test happen before or after birth? When would you do it?
Well, you know, the word babies, you know, we can only screen as well as our diagnostic tools are. And right now, I don't think we have a great tool for newborns. But they're referring to babies up to 30 months of age. So certainly that's the age range in which we could catch a lot of these, and I see no reason to wait until later. I mean, if someone is having trouble with social skills or communication or behavior, why would you let that go unaddressed?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We've been missing the girls. We need to get some gender-appropriate screening tools and get in there and help them early. Early intervention has better outcomes, and that's been proven.
Yes. I wonder if all parents are in the frame of mind to want to know this information that early on.
You know, I kind of give autism parents a pass. There's a little bit of us that doesn't want to know. There's a little bit of denial, but really we all want to know. I think we're just afraid of the word autism, and we're finding out that it's not such a catastrophe or tragedy. We're celebrating neurodiversity these days and celebrating everyone's gifts. There are wonderful classroom supports, therapies, health supports. Things are much better now than they were 20 years ago when my son was born.
Is there a way to prevent autism? I mean, can you look at the parents and maybe test them ahead of time and say, you know what, you have a child, this is what is going to happen. Or maybe that's not the humane way of looking at, can you, at the question of preventing autism. Is there something we can do to reverse this trend somehow?
Well, nothing prevents autism itself. However, if you understand the health challenges, yes, we are seeing some emerging, some young research that shows if mom will take high-potency probiotics during her pregnancy, that those children will have less of a challenge with eczema and allergies and asthma than most children on the spectrum. So they're already prone to it, but we can reduce that incidence of this health challenge, not autism itself.
Is there consensus for that, or are you part of a small group of perhaps more on the holistic side?
I'm on the holistic side, and I'm not anti-medicine. I'm not anti-vaccine. I'm all for the rational and appropriate use of medications, but even the American Academy of Pediatrics says medications don't address the primary deficits of autism and shouldn't be the primary treatment. So what are we left with? So we approach things from a natural support, and then if the time comes, we've done everything we can, I'll let parents know, you know, it's time to probably consider some medication.
Are parents with autism the ones having autistic children?
No, anyone can have one. There's a higher rate if there are family members or parents that are on the spectrum themselves. Like I say, there is a genetic component or tendency, but then autistic parents can have a typical child. Non-autistic parents can have autistic children. It's not a straight line of genetic truth there. So, but it does raise the chances if you have family members or parents on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And where do you stand on the whole vaccination controversy?
Well, we're not anti-vaccine, and I don't want to imagine a world without vaccinations. When parents are concerned with vaccines, I do encourage them to vaccinate, but I'll say, hey, these children and adults tend to be very sensitive to anything, even natural substances. So whether it's an over-the-counter supplement, a prescription medication, or a vaccine, I'll say, hey, let's slow it down and do one thing at a time, and we'll get there when we get there.
Right. So the vaccine in itself is not causing the autism. The child with some level of autism on the spectrum is going to react in one way or another to the vaccine because they're more sensitive, and then the fact that your child is autistic may be brought to your attention. But if we test all of the children at the age you recommend, then we know in advance so people don't erroneously make the connection between the vaccine and the autism.
Right. I have one child in my practice that's never had a vaccination in their life and has autism. So I know that vaccines, you know, obviously don't cause all cases of autism. However, people can be allergic to the ingredients or I have patients that have had very severe reactions to vaccines, but anyone can have a reaction to a vaccine ingredient.
The website is loveautismhealth.com. We'll link it on our links page, and the book is already in our store in the number one position at philhewlettandfriends.com. It's called The Unprescription for Autism, A Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, and More Focused Child. The book, let's be honest, is for everyone. One out of 40-something babies will be born with some form of autism. So it's everybody now, and it's an important book. Dr. Janet Lintala, thanks for bringing it to our attention and for speaking with us today.
Awesome, Phil. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you. Well, see, there you go. I mean, the odds are either you or I, Chris, are on the spectrum.
Yeah, there's like 100% chance of that.
Right, and I think we know who it is.
Both of us.
Is it?
No.
All right, some level of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're in the creative business?
You could say that, or because we're both slightly challenged.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
That could be it. We won't go into
especially today. I'm feeling pretty challenged.
Are
today.
You? All
oh,
right.
Yeah.
We won't get into our challenges just yet, because it looks like this weekend is actually a pretty good one for new movies. And so I wonder if Hollywood is out of the doldrums that we hear about all the time. And by the way, here's a question for you. How did Manny the Movie Guy do on his Oscar picks? He joins us live next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex. Joining us is a man who could make you a lot of money in Las Vegas if you listen to him 67% of the time. KMIR-TV Palm Springs movie reviewer, Manny the Movie Guy.
That's right, 67.
16 out of 24 on your Oscar picks, Manny. How do you feel about your performance?
You know what, though? I am so happy that my spotlight won. I've been pushing that spotlight since October of last year.
Yeah.
Not too happy with Sly, though, with Sylvester.
I know. Well, see, you had this whole will win, should win, and you thought that Spotlight should win, but you thought The Revenant would win.
Yeah.
And so what I did is I put together your weighted result, and when you consider the should wins that did win, you're actually at 75%. That's your weighted success rate.
Oh, well, thank you. Now I feel better.
Either way, we're all getting rich in Vegas on those numbers.
I was surprised, you know, at the song that they picked for the Spectre.
I wasn't a fan of that. That it's like really one of the lamest James Bond songs. But you know what? It's a James Bond song, and that's where the Academy goes. So I was not really hoping. I'm not a big Lady Gaga fan.
But you know what? They carted out the vice president, and he shouted at everybody for about 5 minutes about the importance of the song and all of that. And then Lady Gaga performed. It was a nice live performance. With all the kids that were on stage and all of that, and then it was almost like it got dissed.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was surprised by that one. So, but all in all, 16 again, 75%. We're making money in Vegas with you. I gotta say.
I will fine tune my crystal ball next year.
Yeah. Right. And now, what happens with the movies that won big? Like Mad Max, for instance, won a boatload of the secondary awards.
It has the most Oscars. See, that's another one, too. I've been pushing Mad Max in summer, and I'm happy all these movies that I love. My number one favorite film of the year won the Best Picture,
Now, do they come back into the theaters? They go for another run? Is that what happens?
Well, I heard Open Road Films will be re-releasing Spotlight. I think it had re-released Spotlight already to just about 1,000 theaters, though, because it's now out on DVD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, there's still some sort of economic theory behind it. Some say that, you know, a movie like Spotlight may gain at least 14% more afterwards. Like, so far, it's made $40 million at the box office, so maybe it'll bump up, you know, it'll bump into $48 million later.
Yeah, but some of these other movies, like, you can't find the Room or some of these others, Brooklyn, for instance, you can't find them at any theaters.
Yeah, well, Room is now out on DVD.
Okay,
so
good.
I love that movie. And Brooklyn is probably just out, and I bet you it's out in L.A., in all the metropolis cities.
Oh, all right. Well, good to know. Yeah. Now, this weekend, Manny, the new movies look pretty good, if you ask me. Zootopia, that's going to smash the box office, right?
Oh, yes. It's animated film. It's Disney. It's from the company who gave us Frozen. You know, and so it will make tons and tons of money. It's a mammal metropolis, by the way, Zootopia is, where both predators and prey live harmoniously.
Oh.
Now, smack dab in the middle is our heroine, Judy Hopps, voiced by Jennifer Goodwin. She's a country rabbit who wants to be the first bunny cop.
Oh.
Now, the whole premise, though, is when an otter goes missing, Judy must team up with a sly fox named Nick Wilde, voiced with duplicitous grace by Jason Bateman. All the voice characters here, the voice actors are amazing. There's Idris Elba as the chief of the Zootopia Police Department. There's Octavia Spencer as Mrs. Otterton. Her husband was the one who's missing. Oscar winner J.K. Simmons is there too as Leodore Lionheart, the mayor of Zootopia. Even Tommy Chong shows up as Yax, a naturist.
Wow.
Chilled out yak. And yep, even Shakira sings her way as Gazelle, a famous pop star. This is fun, brilliant, vibrant, but what I really love about this, it's like a loving homage to the Lethal Weapon movies. And Zootopia is equal parts buddy cop comedy and crime thriller and mixes both genres to a perfect melange of a great Disney comedy, brave enough to tackle issues of diversity and racism. So I predict both Predators and Praise would love this movie.
You know what London Has Fallen looks like to me, Manny?
Mm.
It looks like the next installment in the Die Hard series.
Exactly. Did you see the Olympus Has Fallen, the original one?
No, I didn't see that one.
Oh, well, watch that, because I enjoyed that movie. No one knew what that film was about, and it went on to make $150 million at the box office. And the same cast return. This time, the stakes are higher. They're now in London, but it's still the same premise, though. The President of the United States, played by Aaron Eckhart, is in danger. He's being targeted by terrorists, and so they decimated much of London, and it's now up to Gerard Butler's Secret Service agent to save the day.
Yeah.
And this one has a lot of great actors, too. Morgan Freeman among them. He returns. He's now the vice president of the U.S. And by the way, really, real quick story. I saw the movie with Morgan Freeman sitting beside me. So I was in my best behavior. And of course, I took a selfie without him knowing it.
Did you have any conversation?
I did. If you go to MannyTheMovieGuy.com, you'll see my fun interview with him, which, by the way, I've interviewed him like multiple times, but I've never told him that I've loved him since The Electric Company back in the 70s. I love him in that TV show. I said he brightened my childhood when I was, when I was a kid for The Electric Company and my adulthood, beginning with Driving Miss Daisy.
He's an American treasure. He really is. Now, Manny, we're running out of time. I'm sorry. We talked so much about the Oscars and all of that got squeezed here. Tina Fey has a funny movie this week, and we have about a minute to talk about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. What is she, an embedded war reporter?
Here's the problem. Well, it's really not a bad movie. I'm actually recommending this. The only thing is they're selling this as a comedy, and it's not. It's got more of a dramatic flair. But it still has Tina Fey's little comic stuff. You know, she's perfect in the role of a self-deprecating workaholic nerdy. So she's at home with the material, but this time she shows a little bit of her dramatic flair, and it's fantastic. The movie is predictably glib and insincere a little bit, but Faye and the rest of the cast find humor and heart with the source material. So go ahead and watch this film.
And go ahead and go to MannyTheMovieGuy.com. Go there often. Manny, always a pleasure. Enjoy your weekend.
Guys.
We'll talk more movies next week.
All right, have a great weekend, everyone.
All right. Hey, coming up on the show, we are going to talk with an expert about the future of Tesla. Can that car company even survive once all the other companies start competing with it directly, or better yet, when Tesla tries to compete with their new everybody car that they're coming out with here real soon? And plus, our travel guy reveals that there's a city in the Pacific Northwest that's on the rise big time. Bet you can't guess which one it is. Those stories and more coming up in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Next!
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. Some of the stories we have for you this hour, the effects of a year in space on the human body. What are your odds of getting lucky with a flight attendant? In flight. And our travel guy has a city for you that may surprise you. Plus a whole lot more. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for listening. Chris Martin is here. And Chris, we'll start with the space station astronaut Scott Kelly. He's been in space for a year and he's back on planet Earth, is he not?
Yes, he is. He caught back this week, actually, and he broke the record for the amount of time spent in space, by the way.
And space does stuff to your body while you're out there, right?
It can, and Scott Kelly proves it. Matter of fact, NASA not only ran, but is continuing to run all kinds of tests on him to see what sort of physiological changes he may have had while spending all that time in space. And this is a unique circumstance because, you know, Scott Kelly has an identical twin brother named Mark.
Yeah.
So you can draw better comparisons for what kind of shifts have taken place in him than you could if he were just an only child or if his sibling wasn't identical. And what they've determined was that when Scott Kelly got back, he was actually 2 inches taller than he was when he left.
Oh, I heard that's what
which
happens.
Which is bizarre, right?
Because your spine in zero gravity, when we're standing here on Earth, gravity is pulling us down.
Yeah, there's a constant pressure on our bodies pushing us towards the core of the Earth.
Yeah.
And out in space, you don't have that. You're just sort of freely floating around, and I guess that allows your bones and your joints and everything else in your body to sort of space out a little bit.
Yeah. So now that he's back,
a lot less contraction.
Back on terra firma, and the effects of gravity are on him once again, his 2 inches will go away in a hurry. Right?
Already gone.
Already gone.
That's right. Just
not long
few
enough
days
to even enjoy it.
No, I know. He wanted to brag to his brother about being taller than him, and only days later, he's already back to normal size. They also said that he had shown some symptoms of actually not aging as many days as he was in space,
ooh,
so maybe even getting a little bit younger while being out there.
Wow.
Yeah, but all those effects seem to be going back to normal, which I have a theory that that's only because out in space you don't have all of the stress and pollutants and things like that that maybe we experience here.
But you know what's
going to
happen. People are going to start opening up these zero-gravity boutiques, right?
Sure.
The fountain of youth is zero gravity. Jump into this chamber and float around for an hour twice a week at $500 a session.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just buy your ticket to space, you know.
Oh, right. I don't know which is cheaper.
Probably the zero gravity chamber.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
It's not going to be cheap to fly out in space once we're able
I'll
to
be
do
franchising
that.
Those clinics here in a couple of weeks.
But you're right. It will be the next miracle cure, just hanging out in zero gravity.
So what else? Anything else weird about him?
No, he's in good spirits. He did a lot of thanking NASA, saying that this wasn't my accomplishment. It was NASA's accomplishment.
Well, he's America's favorite astronaut at the moment because he's been on TV a lot.
And he's got such a great attitude.
Yeah.
So it's hard not to like the guy.
We like him. Now, I understand that some aviation record was set by an airline.
That's right. Yep, a world record was set. Another one was broken this week. The world's longest nonstop commercial airline flight happened earlier this week, and it's an Emirates Airbus A380. It flew for over 17 hours straight, going from Dubai to Auckland, New Zealand.
Wow. Did they take
17
a long
hour,
way?
17 hours, 15 minutes. I'm pretty sure it was a direct flight, but just the distance alone is so far that it takes that many hours to travel that distance.
My goodness.
It's a long time to be in a plane. I went to China one time. I'm going to say 2010, and it was a 14-hour flight. And, man, is that a long time to spend on an airplane.
Yeah.
It's 17 hours. These guys were another almost 3.5 hours.
That's why it's imperative they make those seats more comfortable, don't you think?
On those long-distance flights, they usually are. And then the seat headrest in front of you has a television. You can swipe your credit card on it and watch whatever movie you want. The food's significantly better than on any other flight. I do want to throw in there that the record is going to be broken later this month already.
By the same airline?
By the same airline. They have a flight plan from Dubai to Panama City that will last about another 20 to 30 minutes.
Now, what if they just put the pedal to the metal a little bit? They could actually fly that distance and cut the time down couldn't they?
Sure, and we'd all enjoy the flight a little bit more.
Or would they burn too much gas and then it wouldn't be feasible?
I'm sure it's a lot like when police officers will tell you, you know, or even car manufacturers, yeah, the perfect rate of speed is 55 miles per hour in order to maximize your gas consumption.
Yeah, but
planes have to operate somewhat similarly.
I'll get there 15 minutes earlier if you let me drive 80.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And don't bust me. One last thing, Phil, because this is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The professionals, anybody who analyzes this stuff say that the passengers are expected to experience 25 hours worth of jet lag based on the time change and all the time that they spent up in an airplane.
Yeah. So spend a little extra money and add a day or two to your trip so that you can not destroy your trip by just having the jet lag problem.
Get a couple of Ambien and sleep your way through the jet lag.
Yeah, is that how it works? Related to that, we were talking about how to be comfortable on those long flights. Here's one way. According to a new survey, 89% of flight attendants have broken at least one rule while they were working a flight, including one in five who've joined the Mile High Club.
What's the Mile High Club, Phil?
That's when you have a little sex in flight.
Oh, that's the Mile High
Club. That's the Mile High Club.
Oh, I thought it was when you flew into Denver.
Yeah. Right. Maybe this stat isn't all that surprising. It may be why some of them became flight attendants in the first place. But anyway, here are some top four rules they admitted to breaking. 28% have lied to a passenger and said they were out of something, like headphones or an extra pillow, because they didn't feel like getting it.
Oh, that's lazy.
Or it's a bad customer, you know,
right,
passenger, and they say, screw you, I'm not getting you anything.
Goes to show you.
You're a jerk.
Be nice to people.
21% have had relations with a pilot or another flight attendant during a flight, and 14% said they've gotten it on with a passenger. So 14%, that's better than 1 in 10. Is that better than your odds in a bar?
Not my odds at a bar, no, but maybe other people.
And there may be a little overlap between those groups. The survey didn't say, so let your fantasies do the rest. 20% have shortchanged someone, and not by accident. The ones who admitted to it make about $40 a month shortchanging people.
Huh. A little pocket change.
Yeah. And 7% have accepted tips, which is expressly against the rules.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, if you're up there, someone slips you a 20. Of course you're going to pocket it, and then you're going to bring them the headphones that they want.
Let's say, look, I'm not really supposed to accept tips, so why don't you and I head over to the bathroom and have sex?
Right,
and then
okay,
money will be justified.
Yeah. I'm curious, who do you think of that 1 in 5 flight attendants, do you think it's more male or women?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because we have that male-driven mind where we just assume it's some, you know, beautiful female flight attendant that's performing this act, but guy flight attendants, I'm sure they have their opportunities.
The male-driven mind says that when we get up by ourselves to go to the bathroom and there's one that doesn't say occupied and you open it and inside there are two gorgeous female flight attendants going at it.
Yeah, that's recurring dream I have on airplanes.
That's what the male mind thinks, right? And then you go in and close the door and occupado and then, you have the best flight ever.
But that might not necessarily be the case. Could be two dudes in there.
Now, here's a 23-year-old flight attendant for American Airlines who put out a fire in one of the bathrooms last month on a plane on a flight from Dallas to Detroit. But later he was arrested because it turns out he started the fire so he could put out the fire and look like a hero.
Some people. Yeah. Some people's kids.
Yeah. I don't know. That's in the stupid criminals file. Right?
My dad got busted tampering with a smoke alarm one time so he could have a cigarette on an airplane.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah, but it was before it was like federally against the law.
What a renegade.
Sort of a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, he'd go to
federal. Or a nicotine addict, one of the two.
I guess so. I love cars. Do you love cars?
Sure.
It's an interesting time because of all the hybrids and all-electric cars. And the most interesting player in the electric space continues to be Tesla. It's a car company that plays by its own rules and is doing well enough and ready to launch a new vehicle in a price range that makes it very competitive with cars like the Prius or the Volt. So what does Tesla's future look like? An expert who has thought long and hard about this joins us next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports a Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports a Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.
Are you still at the stage when you're driving around and you say, oh, look, a Tesla? Do you still do that?
I don't really even notice them compared to the other hybrids.
You don't? Really?
No, they don't stand out to me for some reason.
Well, it's a big car. The Model S is a big, beautiful car. And then I don't know if they sell the Model X yet. That's the SUV with the gull wing doors. You know, the doors that open up instead of out.
Yeah, like the DeLorean.
Yeah. And that Model X, from what I read, it has autopilot. Does that mean you get out on the open road, you set it on autopilot, you can take a little nap?
I hope not, because that sounds dangerous.
Sounds fun to me. I'd love to be able to nap while I'm driving.
Hire a driver.
Brent Goldfarb is an associate professor of strategy and entrepreneurship at the University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. He knows his stuff, and he's taken a look at Tesla and has some thoughts about the future of that company. He joins us live now. Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure that you're here. Give us a backgrounder on Tesla, the company.
So, sure. Tesla is an electric car manufacturer, and it was heralded when it came along as the company that was going to revolutionize the sector. In fact, it's still often described as the disruptive force in the electric car industry.
Yeah, because you buy a car from Toyota or from Chevy or whoever it is, and you plug it in overnight and you get 20 to 50 miles of range. And Tesla comes out with a luxury car that'll go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, and it has 200 miles of range on an electric charge. And so it's outside of the generic thinking that comes from the big automakers.
Well, that's right. But I think the big automakers were quite aware of this range anxiety that you're alluding to. And most people want a car that they can drive to work and then go out of town if they want to. And Tesla was the first electric vehicle to actually be able to do that with its long range. However, it's very expensive to do that because the batteries you need to be able to pull that off add huge, half the cost of a $70,000 Tesla is the batteries.
Yeah.
And so that makes it really hard to produce a low-cost vehicle that can go that far.
Yeah, high-end, high-priced car, not for everybody, but they are in a lot of people's dreams. And so I wonder, is Tesla making any money with their luxury high-performance electric cars? Is there some margin there?
Well, I think at the high end, they can make something, although they still lose. Tesla's burn rate is very high. They go through hundreds of millions of dollars in a few short months, and that's a huge risk to the company.
Yeah. All right. So now the way I understand it is, say, Toyota, for instance, sells the Prius, not because Toyota cares about the environment, but because for each Prius Toyota sells, it gets credits from the government that allow it to sell a more profitable SUV. Is that more or less correct?
Yeah, that's basically right. They have to hit an average vehicle emissions standard. And so because the electric vehicles are so high on that, then that's basically what happens. So you're
right.
Dead on.
Yeah, okay, good. So there probably isn't a lot of margin in a Prius. They just want to unload as many of those as they can so they can make money with the other cars.
That's basically right, yeah.
All right. Now, Tesla doesn't enjoy that kind of opportunity, does it?
No, it doesn't. And this is a huge problem because while it might be able to make money at the high end of the luxury market, because margins are very high in the high end, once it gets down into that competitive $35,000 car range, it's very, very difficult to make much on every car.
And Tesla's about to do that with the launch of the Model 3, which is more or less in the same price range as a Prius, right?
Well, maybe. It is a little bit more expensive than the Prius, but Chevy has beat them with the Bolt. They've announced that they're going to release their car later this year, and the Model 3, who knows? It's a very elusive sort of vehicle.
Yeah. Now, if the Model 3 comes out and it has, as purported, all the luxury of the Model S, just a little bit smaller, then you look at that and you say, okay, if I'm going to spend $35,000-$40,000 on an electric car, do I buy the Tesla or do I buy the Bolt? And that's going to be a hard decision for a lot of people.
Phil, well, I suppose that if they did come out with basically a Model S for half the price, yeah, but you know what they say about stories that are too good to be true.
Yeah. So, well, but I'm just guessing, though, that the demand will be good because a lot of people probably fantasize about the Tesla, but they can't afford a Model S. And if they could afford the Model 3, then they're going to go for it. So let's say there is a good demand. Is Tesla ready to fill that demand?
No. No, I don't think so. They're having trouble building up their capacity successfully already. And so the rollout of such a high production vehicle would be really difficult. You know, Tesla makes 50,000 vehicles a year and Ford and GM make 10 million.
Yeah.
It's a completely different scale.
So on a head-to-head competition, Tesla cannot compete with the big car makers, right?
I don't see it, no.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, though, and I wonder about this, Elon Musk, he's the guy behind Tesla. He's one of those guys who repeatedly proves people wrong by just doing things his way. It's almost like he plays in this alternate business universe that is perhaps just as good as the established conventional wisdom universe. Do you buy that?
Well, I agree. Elon Musk has a reality distortion field as good as Steve Jobs ever was.
Yeah.
But at this point, Tesla has not been profitable in the 6 years since it went public. And at the end of the day, the investors start to question whether he can pull it off.
Now, what's the end game for Tesla? Sell it to GM or Ford or Chrysler or go the way of the DeLorean?
No, I don't think it'll go the way of the DeLorean because the Tesla brand is exceptionally strong. And so that is very valuable and somebody will pick it up. I expect it to be purchased by one of the other larger manufacturers at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And then which manufacturer do you expect to rise up, compete head-to-head with a nameplate and perhaps out Tesla? Would it be somebody like BMW or Mercedes or Volvo for that matter?
Well, I think they're already doing that in practice. I can't predict it. It would have to be one of the higher-end luxury manufacturers. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say.
Yeah. All right. Well, we sure like watching it, and we can't wait till that thing comes out. Are they selling a Model X yet? Is the SUV for sale, do you know?
I believe they are, but there's very few so far out on the streets.
And where do you stand on the autopilot? Are you like me? Do you want to take a nap while you're driving?
Absolutely. I'm waiting for the day when I don't have to drive anymore.
Yes, that's good. I love that. All right, Brent Goldfarb, thank you so much, sir. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and we'll continue to watch what happens, and maybe we'll get one of those in the garage one of these days. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, so what do you think, Chris?
I think that's where the future is going, and Elon Musk is probably at the forefront of what's going to happen.
I don't know if Elon Musk is behind this, but here's where the future is going. Taco Bell is testing three new Crunchwrap sliders filled with cheddar jalapeno Cheetos. That's right.
Awesome.
I said Cheetos.
Yeah, excellent.
There are three versions: beefy cheddar, spicy chicken, and supreme.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, it's only in Canada. There's no word when it might come to the U.S. Why would they test a Cheeto-filled Crunchwrap slider on Canadians and not on Americans? We love our Cheetos, do we not?
We sure do, and we love our Crunchwraps. I think Taco Bell already has a selection of Crunchwraps here in the United States, just none of them with Cheetos
in them
yet.
Just not Cheetos. Are you a big Cheetos fan?
I like Cheetos, yeah. I like them a lot. I like the texture. You know what also might be good is if you put pork rinds in the Crunchwrap.
Oh.
That could be good, too.
Now we're talking. A little, little pepper, red pepper and some vinegar flavor on there, too.
Sure. Just some good old-fashioned chicharinos.
Chicharinos.
I'm a big fan of crunchy.
Thought it was chicharrones.
Oh, that could be it, too.
Yeah. All right. Now, a guy in Florida paid a stripper $300 because he thought that she'd have sex with him.
Right.
But she just gave him one of those old-fashioned lap dances, and eventually the cops got involved, and he told them he wanted to make a citizen's arrest.
On the stripper for not having sex with him?
Yeah. So they told him to back off or he'd be arrested.
Right. Yes, because that's prostitution and it's illegal,
right,
except for certain parts of Nevada.
Yeah, they said, dude, do you realize what you just said to us? You'd pay the girl $300 for sex? You better just, hush. Shh.
Yeah.
Zip it.
Take it down a notch, bud. You just got had at a strip club. Don't worry. You're not alone.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Hey, there's a real estate boom in the Pacific Northwest.
Cool.
Did you know that?
No.
And it's in a city that you may not have thought of as an appealing place to live. But people are flocking there for all sorts of reasons. Good reasons. Exciting reasons. In fact, this city's worth visiting. Our travel guy will tell you why and which city you should get up and pack your bags and go to right away. And he joins us next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, let's do our travel segment now with our travel guy, Gary Warner, who joins us live. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent. Even better now that you're here, sir.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, Gary, when we went to the break, I teased the audience about this Pacific Northwest city where real estate prices are through the roof. And if I didn't already know which city you were talking about, because you told me, I wouldn't have picked this city. So go ahead. Tell everyone else which city you're talking about.
Well, Seattle is so stratospheric already in real estate. I mean, you got Asian companies that are buying up single family homes just to have them as an investment. But the place where, you know, reality is still somewhat on hold is but is becoming very hot is down in Oregon, and that would be Portland. You know, there's the TV series on Portland and how weird it is. It's become a food mecca. It's always been a beer mecca. Where Seattle is kind of like Sydney or San Francisco, Portland is like Pittsburgh. You know, it's very post-industrial, it's a muscular city. It's not real pretty, but boy, once you dig in, it's a great place.
Yeah, you know, you hit the nail on the head there for me. The times I've been to Portland, the downtown area, it wasn't all that inviting to me.
No, it isn't. That is changing somewhat, but part of the whole draw of Portland is the many neighborhoods outside Burnside, Hawthorne, places like that. But the downtown area, which is where I stayed on my most recent trip, is growing very quickly in good ways and bad. One of the things that Portland is famous for is its food carts. They have over 600 carts of different kinds of food that are scattered all over the city. And they have to stay in one place, unlike food trucks in Los Angeles that can drive around.
Yeah.
You can't do that in Portland. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they group in pods. They're called, you know, food stall pods. Mm. And there's about 20 to 30 of these all over the city. And you can get anything you want there. But they're mostly on parking lots downtown that are all owned by this one company that recently announced it's going to start building skyscrapers.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
That's a bummer.
So the skyline's going to change for sure, and there's going to be construction and dust and all of that. Oh, by the way, you know, before you go on to that thing, a thought occurred to me. With all these food trucks and pods, does that make them gastropods?
Gastropods. I like that. Yeah. Use that term. But, you know, a couple of my favorites have already been forced out of business. Viking Soul Food, which was, comfort food from, Norway. And the only Georgian, as in not like Jimmy Carter and Grits, but as in Russia, food stall, also called it quits. Now, both those places are continuing to sell their stuff by email, but they're off the street.
Viking soul food. That struck a chord for me. But all right, so we have the food trucks. We have the beer, plenty of craft beer in Portland. I know that.
Tons of craft beer. I mean, every time I come, there's another brew pub. I mean, the brew pubs that I visited, 10 years ago have either gone away or they're bigger. And there's new places like Ex Novo and Hopworks and Berlick and Ecliptic. And they're really doing the thing of great beer with great food, often inspired by some of these food carts.
All right, so we have the food and the beer, but what's there to do?
What's there to do? Well, you eat and you drink beer.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, quite frankly, when you look at most trips, I mean, you can go to the museum or something like that if you really want to.
Well, you go up the Columbia River and check out the Multnomah Falls, like everybody else does.
Yeah. In fact, I stayed at the Multnomah Falls Hotel, which is one of the oldest hotels in the city, but it's now an Embassy Suites. It's the only Embassy Suites that's also on the National Register of Historic Places.
Yeah.
So, there's bicycling tours where you can go all through all the neighborhoods. There's the Rose Festival, the Rose Garden. Mm-hmm. There's coffee. I mean, this town has tons of coffee places. Mm-hmm. But it's basically a city of people that you go to experience as an urban experience. That's what I enjoy most about Portland. I might get in some trouble here, but I don't think there's a world-class museum there. There's nothing like the Chihuly Glass Museum up in Seattle or the Boeing Aerospace Museum. Mm-hmm. This is a place you go and you hunker down and you walk around with friends and you eat and you drink and you go see some go tour the Rose Gardens, walk around the Rose Gardens and go down by the river and watch the freighters come up, the river, and then go get some more beer.
Yeah.
And then, that's a weekend there.
Is there a waterfront scene around the corner on the ocean side?
On the ocean side, no. You got to realize that Portland is way up river. It's a very deep river, the Columbia River, that allows the ships to come all the way into Portland.
But it has an enormous inlet, right? It's just
an
huge.
Enormous inlet. I mean, you have to drive more than an hour, I think, to get to Astoria, which is the town, a great town, which is on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about an hour to the coast. But you will see in downtown Portland, you will see, tankers and freighters and things like that.
Are people drinking beer and eating food and going fishing? Are they doing that?
I don't know about the fishing thing. I think a lot of the fishing is done in the freshwater fishing out on the rivers that come off of Mount Hood, which you can see from Portland, or down by the ocean. The Viking soul food place I used to go to had wild salmon wraps. That was their thing with lingonberries, butter, and honey. Mm. And so there's a lot of fishing around, but.
Yeah.
It's an urban scene. Yeah. And this is it's a really rough-hewn town. I mean, its official nickname is the Rose City because of the roses. But everybody knows it is Stumptown. And it's called Stumptown because it grew up so fast in the 19th century that people would chop down the trees, but they wouldn't pull the stumps out. So the wagons would have to kind of like weave between the stumps on the roads.
Are the stumps still there?
No, the stumps aren't there, but Stumptown Coffee is there, which is fantastic.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah, wow.
Great town.
Well, you know
what? Get there before it changes too much.
I think you've changed my mind about Portland. I want to go back
and
visit.
It's definitely a great spot, and there's still an art scene there. Seattle, I love Seattle, but it's just they priced everybody out in Seattle.
Yeah. All right. Well, Gary, thank you for this. I mean, this is eye-opening stuff, and we appreciate it. And you have a great weekend. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks with another spectacular location.
Sounds good. It's starting to warm up. Got to start talking about, spring break and summer vacation. It's going to be great.
All right, Gary.
Fleshy time.
You got it. Talk to you soon, Gary.
Bye.
All right. There he goes. Would you have considered going to Portland if you were to pick a city?
If I had a full list of cities to choose from, it would be probably lower to the bottom, but if I had a free trip, I'd go, no problem.
Yeah, because I think, all right, Seattle, Portland. It's a no-brainer. You're going to go to Seattle, right?
Sure. Yeah, and I've been to Seattle. Beautiful city.
Yeah. Well, I've been to Seattle. I've been to Portland. And I say Seattle won, but it's been a few years. And I didn't experience all the beer and the gastropods. And
right.
Right.
You got to go take in the full scene.
And I'm checking out this website right now, Viking Soul Food. I had no idea there was something like that out there. I'm excited about that.
Just the name alone gets you excited.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I have heard that Oregon has some of the best beach scenery that most people don't know about. You know
that's
I mean?
Not
you think
that's
about beaches,
not
you think
Portland.
About California beaches. Or yeah,
that's a bit farther south. Along the, what do they call it? The Long Beach. Long Beach is in Oregon, am I right? And then there's like Lincoln City, I think it is. I may be mixing things up. That might be Washington.
Yeah. By the way, in answer to your question about whether or not the people fish, drink beer and then fish, the answer is yes.
Oh, so, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know.
I can tell you
a lot
that.
Of people like to go fishing. Now, you know who Tom Brady is, the whole Deflategate thing? Well, I think the NFL is about to flush Tom Brady or send him down the river with the fishes. And Chris, you'll explain that to us next, will you?
You got it.
All right. That's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You know who Ron Jeremy was, right?
No.
He was, he's a porn star. He was an extra in the movie Ghostbusters. He's in a scene at the end where the crowd of people on the street watch the Ghostbusters head into the building. And no, he doesn't have sex with anybody. Marvin Gaye, you know who that was, right? Or is a singer, right?
Sure, famous let's singer. Get it on.
He trained, believe it or not, to play pro football. Marvin Gaye still alive? No, he's not. I didn't think so. Okay. He trained to play pro football in 1970 and tried to get a tryout with the Detroit Lions.
Wow.
But since he had zero football experience, the coach didn't want him to get hurt and turned him down.
Probably for the better.
Yeah.
Coach was looking out for his best interest.
Right. I think so. And so I think we're all better because of it.
I agree.
Speaking of football... the whole Deflategate thing just won't go away. It seems like they could say, okay, here's what happened. Now let's move on. But there's no moving on yet until, I think, until the NFL kills Tom Brady. Right?
Yeah, they want revenge is what it feels like at this point. I think they feel like they have egg on their face from the previous appeal last year, which Tom Brady sort of handily won and suffered no suspension. And now Tom Brady's defense team and the NFL are back in court over Deflategate because the NFL appealed Tom Brady's appeal. And according to recent reports, the NFL is not taking it easy on the future Hall of Famer. They're looking to punish Brady for conduct detrimental to the game and also to set a precedent for all the other players in the league. And they are really going at him hard.
So what do you think the end result here is going to be? Now, Brady going to be banned from ever playing again?
No, but my belief is that he will suffer some sort of suspension from
maybe,
the league for
maybe,
a certain amount of
maybe
time.
Maybe banned from the Hall of Fame.
No, I don't think so? That's going to happen. That's my personal opinion, but no, I think that they'll probably suspend him for some games, probably hit him for some more money. I mean, at the end of the day, the evidence is really stacking up against him. A lot of people believe that the only reason the appeal was rushed through the courts last season was because the judge looked at it as a non-case. You know, the judge says, this is, well, are we really arguing about football and whether or not somebody took a few ounces of air out of a football? This is ridiculous. Get out of my courtroom was sort of the approach. And now that football season's over and many of the people that work in the legal system are looking to make some coin,
they're
taking the case more seriously. And the evidence says Tom Brady probably was not only a part of Deflategate, but a major key in helping tamper with these game balls.
Yeah, all right. Do you think it's important?
For the integrity of the sport, yeah, and for the, you know, the way that the league looks at Roger Goodell and their justice system. Players will probably feel like they can get away with anything if all you have to do is appeal and it gets tossed out.
Put your foot down. Lay down the law.
That's right. Right? Yeah, you have to set a precedent.
Okay. Oh, by the way, Viking soul food thing, we added a link to our links page to that. So if you want to just kind of check that out.
What is it? I pictured, like, lamb hawk.
No, it's like fish and lingonberries and that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. They were...
And meatballs.
Seafaring people, huh?
Yeah. Good stuff. I have now with me a list of the 10 nastiest things in your bathroom.
Okay. I can guess a couple of them, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The toilet.
Like a bad smell. You either just use the bathroom or it's been so long since you cleaned the toilet, it always smells.
Right.
Probably should clean your bathroom daily, I'm just thinking.
Yeah, it's a little excessive, but I think definitely air it out.
Yeah, but I think if you've got any men in the house, there's no avoiding getting the splatters here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's not exonerate women either. They go number two also.
Yeah, but it's not flying around the room. It's contained.
Think it is. All right.
It's contained because they create a vacuum lock.
Right. Okay.
General filth. Meaning it looks like you never clean it. You know, you get those little brownish areas on the tile and around the bottom of the toilet. And around, if you get them around the sink, now that's just gross.
Yeah, you have to be careful in those moist environments.
Nastiest things in your bathroom, no toilet paper.
That is gross.
If you're a grown-up, you should always have an extra roll in there, please. Come on.
Yeah.
Dirty towels. Oh, man. You know, because if you're like me and you don't wash your hands thoroughly when you go to dry, you leave it like a homeless cast on the towels. You know what I mean?
Now, do you only use a towel once before it ends up hitting the dirty laundry?
You mean a shower towel?
Yeah, a shower towel. I'll go a couple runs with.
I'll use mine two or three times. Yeah, and then after that, it's like now the towel has probably has some kind of bacteria in it, if not just a little mold from being wet for a while.
Yeah, once it starts to stiffen up, you know that it's time to replace it.
Yeah, don't use things on your body that are stiffened. No soap. Again, you're a grown up. Make it happen. Get some soap in there. Hair in the sink. So if you have some friends over, you know, have a little party, and people go into the bathroom and there's hair in the sink,
clean it up.
Like you didn't bother to clean up after you, you know, brushed out the knots in your hair, or after you shaved, you know, the shave hair with the shaving cream stuck to it.
Oh, I know all about it.
Wash that down. Hair in the tub isn't much better, by the way. Dirty clothing on the floor.
Yeah, that shouldn't be in the bathroom.
Yeah, at least throw it on the bedroom floor so people don't go in there. Keep that door closed, right?
All right.
No lock on the door, the bathroom door.
Okay, fair enough.
Just kind of unnerving because you think, all right, I don't live here. I'm going to go in. I don't know the rules.
Yeah, you do that thing where you try to brace the door closed.
Yeah, or you angle a little bit away so that if somebody does walk in, they don't inadvertently see because even though somewhere deep in your subconscious you'd like them to see, but it would be inappropriate if they did.
Right. Yeah, so you're just trying to be civil.
Yes, exactly. Right? Because on some subconscious level, it's like, hey, wee, check this out.
Yeah.
I'm going pee. Wee. Now, what else? Oh, I got a couple more. These are the 10 nastiest things in your bathroom. An old, overused toothbrush. If the bristles are frayed, it's time for a new one.
I agree with that.
What's a toothbrush cost? 50 cents?
It depends on what kind you get, but if you're not spending at least $3 to $5 on a toothbrush, you're
really? A
$5
toothbrush?
You don't really care
toothbrush?
About your dental hygiene.
I don't buy the toothbrushes. My wife doesn't. We're always fully stocked in toothbrushes. They cost $3 for a toothbrush?
If you want a good one that's really going to, you know, get into all the nooks and crannies of your
A $3
mouth.
Toothbrush seems like it would like floss for you.
No, it just has a nice grip on it, usually some flashy colors and like some little rubber things sticking up.
Some lights?
A tongue scraper.
Yeah, well, there you go. All right, now the number 10 and perhaps the most gross thing, condoms that are out in plain view. It by the way, if you're single, it could hurt your game to be that presumptuous. You know, not necessarily used one, but a package of condoms, right?
Yeah, that shouldn't be in plain sight.
Yeah, you want to have a little mystery.
Put it in a drawer somewhere. Not even the medicine cabinet, because who doesn't go into somebody else's bathroom and open the medicine
cabinet? Now, if you do have a used condom in plain sight, what's the matter with you? What kind of a ridiculous slob are you?
Yeah.
Right?
You nailed it. That's exactly right. Ridiculous slob.
Should be in prison with the felons.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of prison and felons, an 18-year-old convicted felon here in Los Angeles County Juvie wrote a letter to Pope Francis asking for forgiveness and received a response from the Pope.
He did.
He did. The Pope wrote him back claiming that God has opened a holy door to juvenile jails, which the young man should celebrate in order to receive the gifts that come through. Francis also asked the young man named Carlos, by the way, to please remember to pray for him as well, saying that he greatly needs prayers at this time. So when the Pope responds to you, he expects a response in kind. In other words, I'll pray for you, you pray for me.
Yeah.
We'll keep the
cycle.
Well,
that's a little reverse psychology, isn't it? Is like the Pope trying to pull the little religious strings on this guy while he's in prison and say, hey, you know, God is speaking to you, son. And I need your help too, so pray for me. And so that you get somebody to start praying, then they start thinking that maybe there is a higher power out there and they should turn their life around while they're in prison. So a little reverse psychology.
And this man now, this young man, I should say, now firmly believes that there is in fact a higher power and says that he will become liberated. And when he does get out, he'll become an influence, the likes of Cesar Chavez, Martin Luther King Jr., Mandela, and Malala. This was part of his response back
to the Pope. He included Malala, huh?
Sure. Yeah, she's on that list.
Yeah.
Very influential, iconic figures.
Yeah. If you don't know who that is, go ahead and Google Malala. I'm not going to go into it now. Mm. Broken heart is a real thing, Chris. Have you ever had your heart broken?
I have.
When you
I've broken others' hearts.
Have you?
I bet you have.
But just walking down the street, you break hearts.
There's only one time in particular I remember, but it was brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Oh, God, it hurts. Oh. When you get bad news, it can cause swelling in your heart that can cause a fatal heart attack.
Hmm.
So bad news could break your heart. And a study found that it can happen when you get really good news, too.
Yeah.
So amazing things can happen in your life, and you can get a broken heart. Literally, a broken heart.
Well, that's wild. That's definitely where a lot of sensations come from, is that center area of your chest.
That's right. Get the blood rushing. Hey, we love your comments. Go to the website, philhewlettandfriends.com. You can click on the contact button. But better yet, there's a little blue tab on the right that says leave us a message, a voicemail. If you've got a microphone on your computer, and I know you have one on your phone, go ahead and click that. Just speak into it for free. Leave us a voice message. If you listen to us on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.